Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are chatting with Jeff Christian, managing partner at the CPM Group. And Jeff, we're chatting to you on the day that the 2022 Gold Yearbook launched. Now, to bring everybody up to speed, CPM Group puts out a gold and silver yearbook each year that contains, I guess, detailed statistics on the international markets, gold market in particular, for this gold yearbook. Also includes analysis of supply and demand trends, bullion and futures market activity, central banks, investment demand, predictions for this year, next year, and even more. So, Jeff, look, there's a lot that goes into this gold yearbook, and a lot of it is recapping what you're seeing in the markets and then looking ahead. How do you even go about predicting this year when we seem to have black swan events that are still ongoing with the war between Russia and Ukraine? We have Fed central banks completely shifting course with people doubting that they're going to be able to continue down that road. Jeff, how do you even come out with predictions for this year?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, first off, we're always looking at estimating and projecting gold and whatever metal it is that we're looking at, their supply and demand trends. And the big kickers in gold are investment demand and central bank gold purchases. And those are the difficult ones. They're the important ones for price determination. And they're the difficult ones to predict because, you know, mine production sort of runs in long trends and there's a lot of autocorrelation year to year. Secondary supply is less predictable than mine production, but it's somewhat predictable. Fabrication demand, again, a lot of autocorrelation. You're sort of trend following. But with investment demand and with central bank demand, this stuff, you know, can turn itself on and off very quickly. With investment demand, you have millions of people who buy and sell gold worldwide. So it kind of smooths out the volatility to some extent. But with central banks, you have maybe two or three dozen central banks buying or selling gold now, up from a dozen a few years ago. So each individual party buying or selling gold as a central bank has a much more powerful effect on the net total. So that's a little bit more difficult. But we always do this fundamental data, microeconomic look at the gold market. And then we have a macroeconomic view of where the world's going financially, economically, politically. And we put those two together and we come up with a view. This year, it's complicated because of the war. And, you know, there's an adage in the army that is that a battle plan lasts until the first shot is fired. And then it's all unpredictable. So when you're looking at interest rate increases or inflation trends or GDP, you can make projections. But when you get into a battle or a war, it's totally unpredictable. So you shift from making a projection to running scenarios. Now, that's a little bit inaccurate because we always run scenarios. So we always, it's, you know, like we had a scenario up until February 24th that said, you know, this is what we're looking for with interest rates, real GDP, in, stock market, inflation, et cetera, et cetera. We always had a main scenario and then we run two scenarios as alternatives, and sometimes we'll run four scenarios. There have been times when we've run seven or eight scenarios. We had one client who ran 30 scenarios. But when you get into a war like we're in now, scenario planning is much more important. So, you know, when the Russians were gearing up to invade, and it was quite clear that they would invade, and it was quite clear that the United States and NATO would let them invade, we had maybe three different scenarios. After the invasion actually started, we had three different scenarios. And then as things changed and got worse, we had four scenarios. You know, so you resort to scenario planning because the uncertainty of a war and the outcome of the war and the twists and turns between the start of the war and the outcome are just so great that it's much harder to sort of say, this is our main scenario. Is how it's going to go forward. And so we're running on a war basis. We're running scenarios and we're saying, what happens if Russia does this and gains the upper hand? What happens if NATO joins? You know, what happens with the hostages that the Russians have deported to Russia and put in concentration camps. You know, so you have to run with all these different scenarios. It becomes more complicated.
Well, Jeff, it is a game of running scenarios always in the markets, and it's there's no such thing as really a prediction. It's more about probabilistic outcomes, like what is the most probabilistic path forward. But when you look at, you know, the war aside, because that's very unpredictable, when you look at the scenarios around some of the other monetary and fiscal areas and things like the inflationary component and reduction in liquidity from central banks, do you have some general guidelines you'd like to share with people about how you're approaching the precious metals for 2022 moving into 2023?
Sure. Let's start with interest rates, because that's everything starts with interest rates. You know, I was once on a plane with R&B band from the 70s, and I was talking to one of the players while we were flying, and I said I had stumbled across some of their songs on the internet. He said, how did you do that? And I said, it started by me listening to some Marvin Gaye. And he just interrupted me and said, everything starts with Marvin Gaye. But with economics, everything starts with interest rates. So the Fed has become more militant against inflation. So has the Bank of England, and the ECB will probably follow suit soon. The Fed has gone from saying, well, maybe we'll raise interest rates twice this year, saying maybe we'll raise interest rates seven times this year. Our view is that they probably will raise interest rates, but they're going to go from like 25 basis points to maybe 3% on a nominal basis. And depending on what inflation number you use, let's use 7% right now, 3% nominal interest rates is a negative 4% real inflation adjusted rate. Interest rates are going to rise. They're not going to rise. They're rising from a very low level to a low level. You know, 3% nominal rates for our Fed funds rates is probably lower than at any point prior to just a few years ago. So interest rates are going to rise. They will present a modest headwind for the overall economy. A 3% increase in interest rates would be very problematic if we were in a scenario like we were in the 70s, where you had 6% nominal interest rates, and then it went to 14%. You know, 6% to 9% is much more destructive of economic activity and growth than 0 to 3%. And we're going from 25 basis points to 3%. So we think that that will slow inflation. It will have a modest headwind effect on overall economic activity. It will have a modest headwind effect on stocks, and it will have a modest effect on gold, silver, and industrial commodities. So we're seeing that, the first component of our equation, as being modestly negative for gold and silver prices, right? But not enough to throw us into a recession, and probably not enough to keep the stock market from rising to a second level. Then we look at macroeconomics. We saw a very weak first quarter in the United States, parts of Europe, and China. Second quarter is a broken field because of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. We really don't know how the second quarter is going to shake out, but our expectation has been that real economic activity would continue to pick up after a very weak first quarter. The second half of this year, we think that economic activity will be much stronger than it has been in the first quarter, and that there'll be a reduction of concerns on the parts of investors. So that's where we're looking at. Interest rates are rising, but the markets have sort of said, hey, this isn't going to kill the economy. It's not going to kill the stock market. People start moving assets back into the stock market. It probably rises to record levels. And on top of all that, we do expect that the inflation rate, the percentage change in price levels, will come down. It's 7.5-8% right now if you want to look at core or headline inflation. And that is measuring price levels in 2021 and early 2022 compared to the price levels that existed in 2020 and early 2021. When they were very low, we had an economic lockdown. No one was buying anything. There was a pandemic going on. The vaccines only started appearing in the first quarter. If you look at CPI, US CPI in the first quarter of last year, it was 1.3, 1.2, 1.6%. So we're measuring, for now, inflation rates against very low rates in 2020 and the first quarter of 2021. As 2022 progresses, we'll be measuring 2022 price levels compared to 2021 price levels in April onward, when the prices had already risen sharply. So the prices may not decline. And in fact, some of them, like food and petroleum-based energy, probably will rise. But the percentage increase in those prices will come down. So the Fed thinks that you might see 5% inflation by the end of the year. We wouldn't be surprised to see core inflation in the 3 to 4% range. We think, you know, you put that all together, you assume that by the second half of this year, there's some clarity as to how the Russian invasion of Ukraine either gets resolved or moves to a stalemate, either a solution or a stalemate. So we think that in the second half of this year, some of the war premium dissipates that you're seeing in gold and palladium and silver and platinum right now, and some of the inflation premium dissipates, and you have a little bit of headwind from the interest rates. And in that kind of environment, our expectation is that gold prices go back to trading in that 1780, 1880 range, which is what it did for most of the fourth quarter of 2020 and most of 2021. We had three spikes down to 1680 last year. We don't think we're going to see spikes down to 1680. We think we'll see spikes down to 1780 in the second half of this year. You know, the other thing to add to that scenario, or there are a whole bunch of things that we add to the scenarios, but just to keep it short, because I've already talked so long, by-elections in the United States. They're going to be really nasty, and they probably will be accompanied by other nasty news coming out of Washington, specifically the Justice Department. You also probably will see a resumption of some of the talks about divisive ideas within the EU. China continues to have its own internal issues as well as external issues. And then you have the whole question of what happens with Russia after the war. Because Russia, it's impoverished itself. It's demonstrated that it's not a big military power, except for the fact that it has nuclear weapons. It has damaged its international stature. So there's a lot of questions there. There are some things that could be positives for gold. But, you know, our overall view is that we think that the price goes back to trading in that consolidation range that we saw from late 2020 through last year.
Okay, Jeff, I'm glad you touched on some of the international considerations, because I do think sometimes we get a bit bogged down simply in U.S.-focused data and policies. One other thing to consider, and gold, okay, it's up in the 1900s, but gold priced in other currencies is either at or near all-time highs and has consistently been moving to those levels throughout the last few years. So the discrepancy here, what's noteworthy about that?
Well, two things. First off, there's not a discrepancy. Well, let me get back to that. Second thing is, yes, we do address that. And in the supply chapter and in the fabrication demand chapter, we have charts and analysis, textual analysis, talking about the effects of very high prices in various currencies. And we break it down. We look at the countries that are major producers of gold, and then we look at the countries that are major consumers of gold, and we look at gold in their currencies. So we do cover that because it's very important. Second thing, now I'll make a couple provisos about that. A lot of people around the world actually trade gold basis at dollar value. And it's very weird to go into a backwater in, say, Southeast Asia and find people quoting gold in dollar terms, or in Latin America. So the dollar price of gold probably exerts more power there than a lot of us think. And that leads to the second observation, which is that, you know, 62% of monetary financial foreign exchange reserves at central banks is in gold, 62%. And an estimated 70% to 80% of private wealth, financial wealth around the world is denominated in dollars. The reality is that dollar is important on a worldwide basis. And again, just like as you go find gold priced in dollars, you find that people in various parts of the world are very cued into U.S. inflation rates because a lot of their assets are actually in U.S. dollars, not their own currencies. You know, it's interesting as an aside, like in Ecuador and Peru, a couple companies have started paying their workers in cryptocurrencies. And what they found is that the company thinks they're really cool paying in cryptocurrencies. And the workers, when they get paid on Friday night, immediately go to a money changer and exchange the cryptocurrencies for either dollars or the local domestic currency. So, you know, they don't, you know, they're not interested in holding cryptocurrencies. They don't like the volatility. And frankly, a lot of the products that they're buying are denominated in dollars. So the dollar is probably a lot more important than a lot of people think. The second thing, which I would say about a discrepancy about what you said, gold at $1,900 is virtually at a record price. And one of the things that we saw last year was the gold bugs saying, oh, you know, why are gold prices so low at 1860, 1870 an ounce. The fact is that the price on average last year was a record price, higher than the record price, the previous record price, which was set in 2020. So gold may be off on an intraday basis or a daily settlement basis from, I think it got up to $2,058 on a settlement basis in August of 2020. It got up there again in early March when the Russians invaded the Ukraine. It may be off from there, but gold is at a record price in dollars as well as those other currencies. So it's not really a big discrepancy. Obviously, with a stronger dollar, the price in other currencies has risen further than it has in U.S. dollars. But the reality is that the dollar, that the gold price is at a record level in dollar terms, and people need to come to some sort of sense of perspective about what they're looking at.
Well, Jeff, just to add one more to that, I mean, we just had the strongest quarterly close in gold on record in the first quarter of this year that we've ever seen, even with gold in just the 1940s. So I would say that's a pretty strong price of gold. But the other point with the currencies, and I would love to get your thoughts on this as how you reconcile it, is we hear about the strong dollar or king dollar, and I do think it's the benchmark most of the world is using to price their gold and commodities. But when you look at inflation eroding the purchasing power of the dollar, there is a little bit of a tug of war there between having a strong dollar in relation to other fiat currencies that are also being devalued and the fact the erosion of purchasing power by inflation. Wouldn't that erosion by inflation on all currencies still cause not just gold, but all commodities to keep gaining traction?
Well, that's the definition of inflation. Yes, the prices of commodities rise, you know, and in fact, if you look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics monthly data on consumer prices, they actually talk about services and commodities. And when they talk about commodities, they're talking about cars and clothing and sundries and consumer durables and consumer consumables, as well as, you know, petroleum-based energy, natural gas, electricity, and foodstuffs. So, yeah, I mean, the definition of inflation is the rise of commodity prices. You know, so yeah, obviously inflation is eroding the purchasing power of people who buy stuff, including services. So yeah, that it's a major problem. And I don't want to belittle it. I do want to say that while some people will say, oh my God, inflation is at the highest level since 1982, or it's as high as it has been, as it was in 1982. That's true. But we've had a one-year spike in inflation right now to 7.5%, 8%. If you go back to 1982, inflation was at 7.5%, 8%, on its way down from 14%, at the end of a 14-year period during which inflation was 5%, 7%, 10%, 14% for 14 years. So you had 14 years of hyperinflation in a vastly different economic and financial system that existed back in the 70s when you got down to 7.5, 8% in 1982. So to say, yes, inflation rates are at their highest level since 1982, that's true. but you have to put it into the perspective of, but this is a one-year phenomenon so far. And yeah, there's certain people, mostly on the West Coast, I'm sorry to say, who will, you know, draw a straight line and say inflation is going to be 75% next week. But the reality is that there's a lot of indications that inflation rates will come down over the next 1 to 2 to 3 years, and that we're in a far, far different world than we were in the 1970s.
All right, Jeff, you know what? We're going to wrap it up here. We've talked a lot about some of the information that is in the 2022 Gold Yearbook. I will post links below to a video that you just recorded in terms of market updates, as well as where people can buy the 2022 Gold Yearbook. Jeff, thank you for taking some time. I do enjoy reading over the Gold Yearbook, and I'm looking forward to reading over this year's version as well. Jeff, thanks again for your time. I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thanks.